I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub. Hello and welcome back to the Moon Underwater, where we are here with the comedian Jessica Fosterque creating her dream pub, and it is a cracker so far, full of Scrumpy and Fosters and other stuff. But before the interval, we had a quiz about Olympic sports from Dan. Dan, would you like to continue?
Yes, so we'll just do a quick recap of the three questions. This is classic old school question of sport. I'll give you a list of terms and you need to tell me what Olympic sport they are used in. So the first one, the terms are fletching, knocking point, that's with a N at the beginning, not a K, and shaft. Which Olympic sport are they from? We'll go to you first, Jessica.
I think
Robbie will be honest. He won't just copy you.
We'll take turns and go first. I'm pretty confident on two of these.
Me too. But that's going to be misplaced. I think this one's archery.
Okay.
I think this one's archery. You're both correct. It's archery. Well done. One apiece. Do you know what they are?
That's
a fletching.
Is that the feathering?
It is.
Yeah.
Feathering, yes.
Is the knocking point the little notch?
Yeah.
Yes, the place on the bowstring where the arrow rests before being shot. And the shaft.
Obviously, the arrow.
The middle bit of the arrow.
Yeah.
Good.
It's the archer's penis.
And conventionally.
Yeah. It's weird that they talk about that during the commentary, isn't it?
In the sport.
Yeah. We can only do that when we're televising it after hours because it's in a country where it's in the night. For the
Oh, God. What Olympic sport uses the following terms? Hogu, Jusim, Arp, Chagi.
So shall I go first for this one to make it fair?
Yep.
This is the one I'm not sure on.
Okay.
I suspect it's a martial art. I suspect it's either judo or taekwondo. And I'm going to guess judo.
Okay.
I'm having exactly the same thoughts, genuinely, and we'll go taekwondo in that case.
Jessica takes it.
Oh, sorry.
2-1.
that's the show business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 50-50, wasn't it? Hogu is the padded chest protector.
Oh.
Jusim is the ref.
Right.
Huh? And Arp Chagi is a front kick or front snap kick.
Amazing.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Third and final one. 2-1 to Jess. So you've sorry, I just called you Jess there.
That's
a bit familiar.
Good. I like it.
I called her Jess earlier, but I've met her once before.
Yeah, in 2009,
so that's fine.
You need to get this for a draw, Robbie. What Olympic sport uses the following terms? Fakey, goofy, ollie. I think this is the easiest one.
Yeah. This is skateboarding.
Skateboarding.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I'm just checking on that because I know that snowboarding is goofy. That's why I was asking about winter sports as well.
They're probably all used in snowboarding.
I don't know if ollie's probably not, is
probably
it?
Not.
That's the trick, isn't
Off
it?
The ollie is the basis for most tricks in skateboarding. Uses the back foot, the skater uses the back foot to smack the tail of the board against the ground while the front foot pulls the board up into the air.
So it's like the vegetable stock of skateboarding.
Yeah, very much so.
The bouillon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well done then.
Great
victory.
Well,
I'm over it.
Yeah,
I am. It doesn't sound like it am, but I am.
You were very close. You were very close to, it was a 50-50.
Yeah, it was. That's when you're at this level that we are in quizzing.
Yeah.
That's the margins.
Exactly.
That's the margins.
Yeah.
Jess, you get to pick two spirits.
Yes, okay.
Here. What's your first one?
I'm going to go with tequila.
You have something to put in your Fosters.
It's got nothing to do with Desperado and whatever excuse for a tequila is in that. Now, I don't still know the name of any brilliant ones because I don't drink it often enough. But essentially, growing up, I thought tequila was just a rough aniseed, horrible thing you did shots of with lime and salt to hide how rank it was. And it's honestly only in the last year that I've discovered how delicious it can be when it's fancy pants. I'm not at the point of wanting to sip a tequila on its own, but because I'm not really drinking very much anymore. So I think were I to go in that deep end, I'd be in a pickle quite quickly. I'd have to prep for it basically, because I'd feel it immediately, I think. But I really love a really good margarita. And that's where I've discovered how sexy a great tequila can be, effectively. My favorite margarita I've ever had was a homemade one that my girlfriend made, and like had done it, like made the, put the salt on the rim with a bit of chili, which I love, like really chunky ass salty chili rim, and had made it and bought all the fresh lemon, like squeezed the lemon juice, done everything, got some really fancy tequila. And I had done a CrossFit competition. So I'd been doing PE all day. It was a boiling hot July day in London. Came home, sat in my garden, starving, thirsty. I'd drunk a load of water, obviously, but like the first sip of that was... my mouth's watered remembering it, like it was like something out of a dream. It's my favourite boozy drink now.
Is
margarita.
That difference between the tequila you get in bars when you're 18,
yeah,
and when you actually have nice tequila? It's like, oh, right,
it's bizarre
okay.
that they're classified as the same drink.
Yes, because we went to a tequila bar in Barcelona once, didn't we? Do you remember?
Yes.
Right, I remember going in.
Yeah. No, we did when we were.
I do.
You
do we
remember,
did
yeah.
go to one, yeah.
And that was a lot. That was having actual nice tequila. Like, oh, yes. Okay. This is not what I expected.
Yeah.
First, I was thinking, why would you go to a tequila bar? I'm like, oh, right, because there's nice ones
yeah.
in the world.
It's refreshing to know that there's nice tequilas. And margarita, I think, if you get a good one, I find it difficult to drink it without smiling. It feels like straight away.
It's
you're
sunshine,
like, oh,
isn't it?
Nice.
It really brings the light, I think, that drink. Yeah.
And a massive glass that you need two hands to hold.
Yeah. It is like a party drink, tequila, isn't it?
Sort of
thing. You're having a good time. You're not, no one's doing tequilas at funerals.
No.
I mean, it's like,
although that's why I want mine now.
Yeah. Like a little round, line them all up on the coffin and everyone can have a shot.
Come on. Really margarita expensive. Funerals.
Yeah. Most expensive bottle of tequila sold? Uh-oh. How much do you think?
Oh, God, I've got absolutely no idea.
It's a platinum white gold tequila bottle sold by Tequila Lay 0.925.
That sounds like a bot account.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
I don't believe them. I'll say £1,000.
Oh, I'm going to go £18,000.
Oh. $225,000.
God, better be angels.
It better be a good tequila.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Don't drop that, do you?
No.
Knock that over your carpet.
You don't want to slam that with lemon and salt, I imagine.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do.
Who knows? Do you know, is the lemon and salt thing, is that a traditional thing in Mexico?
I don't think it is.
Or is it just something that we do here?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've been to Mexico, but I can't remember. Yeah, have a little look up in your mind just quickly then. I could do that, but...
Do Mexicans drink tequila with lemon and salt? They normally just have it with a shot glass. You can also have some lime and salt after every sip or two if you feel like it.
What's that at the top there? Did it say that it's the salt and lime are an aid for drinking cheap, sharp-tasting crude tequila?
Crude.
Lovely.
So basically it's
crude
to cover
tequila.
Up the crudeness of your tequila.
When you're on the non-vintage stuff.
Yeah.
A bit like in the old days when sailors would go on boats, I suppose, and they'd chuck tons of salt on the meat so it would go off. Similar thing.
Salt does a lot of good work for rank stuff.
Shit stuff,
Chuck salt on the problem, that'll sort it out. Great, tequila's in there. What else are you having as your spirit choice?
Amaretto, does that count as a spirit?
I think so.
Yeah,
fine. Yum. I don't know if it's liqueur or a spirit. It's so delicious.
It is.
That's something that, I mean, I love it just over ice. It's like the sweetest thing I still love and I've always loved. But I don't know, I wanted quite a long glass of it. I think it's really drinkable. Like I think it's served in too small a portion generally when you get it. and I think as I've got older, my palate's changed. I very rarely am in the mood for something that sweet, even though I think it's so delicious. In more recent years, I've discovered an Amaretto Sours, which is egg whites, whisked egg whites, lemon juice. But you can just have, if you've just got lemon juice, and squeeze some of that into an amaretto if you just don't want it to be. Anyway, and ideally like a really nice sweet cherry in there as well. So yeah, that's flipping lovely. And my girlfriend and I got obsessed with drinking those for about 6 months during one of the lockdowns. And We were in a pub in Glasgow and she said, oh, I can do a trick, actually. I can do it. Can anyone else do this? And she put the cherry stem in her mouth and then, like, fiddled about with it and then brought it out and she tied a knot in it with her tongue. But because, and I thought, everyone's like, oh my God, well, that is amazing. And then because she's like a massive child, she was like, it was a trick. I did it with my hands and then I sipped it in my mouth and then I put a second one. And she basically gave away all her, like, gave away the trick. And I was like, that's interesting. And then later that year, I was like, started realizing I was going to propose to her. And it wasn't a particularly idyllic proposal for lots of reasons. But what I did was taught myself to really tie a knot in it.
Oh, so
cherry stem.
It can be done.
So it was part of the obsession with having amaretto sours all the time. So I needed to keep buying cherries. Every now and again, I'd accidentally buy a jar that had no stems. I'd be like, well, that's fucking waste. I needed the stem. So I was like practicing. So I was like, of course it can be done. Like, it definitely. So I learned to do it. And
was that YouTube video?
And that's how I wanted to propose. I was like, I've learned to actually do it. So I was like, getting ready to propose. But I put the ring in a little plastic bag in my mouth and was like, right, watch this. And like, and did it. And actually, I'd never practiced with something else already in my mouth. So it took ages and ages. And this is like meant to be a romantic moment. There's like little bits of spit coming out. And then in the end, I was like, and look what I've done. And like, took it out. And she was like, yeah, well done. We're about to start playing a board game. And she was like, can we start? And I was like, no, there's something else in there. What else is in there? This is actually the most, looking back on it, the most rank way anyone has proposed ever. Just getting a great big slobbery baggie out of your mouth and then getting a ring out of that. She's like, what the fuck is going on? Is this for real? And I was like, yes, this is me doing romance.
Nailed it.
Yeah, nailed it. Luckily he said yes. Well, she sort of realised it wasn't some sort of horrible hidden camera trick. Oh dear.
And then,
I should have thought
then you
it
played
through.
The game.
Then we played another game of Azul.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. That's great. Yeah, don't know how we get back into amaretto from there, that's fabulous.
Well, can I tell you about the rabbit hole I went down where I started learning about amaretto?
It's going to take a couple of minutes,
but yeah. I think it's sort of worth it. So I read a thing on Wikipedia that said about amaretto that said cyanide is processed out of the almond preparation before it's used.
Phew.
Right? I thought. But it said citation needed. So I was like, oh, is that? So I'm like, well,
or isn't it?
So does that mean the cyanide isn't processed out or it's not an issue or what? So that's where it started.
Is this common knowledge that cyanide is in
almonds?
It's some almonds, bitter almonds, I think. It's been bred out of some.
You can, because I might.
It's like an ingestible amount, but effectively.
Okay, I was going to say, because I put it in my granola.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they're really good for you. Almonds are also super good for you.
So, anyway, amaretto is made from bitter almonds and or apricot kernels, right? Both of which contain amygdalin, which when eaten is broken down into the gut into hydrogen cyanide, which is toxic. So why doesn't amaretto give you cyanide poisoning? I found that question. And someone replied that similar to cooking, the alcohol infusion during the process eliminates any traces of cyanide. So I'm like, okay, fine. But then someone said, apple seeds too have cyanide or cyanide precursors. I once phoned my local poison information centre to ask if it's okay to eat apples, seeds and all, and they told me I'd have to drink a whole apple seed milkshake before it'd make me sick. And I thought, you've got a local poison information centre.
Yeah, and what's an apple seed milkshake? Yeah. But yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And then someone replies. Yeah. Kind of correct. They don't mean an apple seed flavoured milkshake. They mean a milkshake cup of apple seed or apple seed flour. You couldn't get it down. You'd feel sick and lethargic before you managed to get a fifth of the way to a lethal dose. Your body will ensure you don't finish such a lethal meal. Your body has enzymes to deal with cyanide, and the antidote, thiosulfate, helps these enzymes work faster. Normally the enzymes work fast enough to get rid of cyanide in the few almonds, apricots and apple seeds that you consume. So there you go. That's what
there we go.
Saying.
Something, one of the many things we could just filter out.
Someone then sort of corrected them on the most sort of typical, like, you know, tiny, tiny detail level. But then somebody said, I actually once accidentally almost poisoned myself eating apricot kernels. Some varieties are low amygdalin and are eaten. This happened to be an inedible variety, which I didn't realise until my mouth started going numb.
Oh.
So I didn't know that. And then finally, someone said, There is one case on record that I'm aware of where someone managed to kill themselves with apple seeds. But it wasn't just a couple of seeds. A guy saved up apple seeds in a bowl for a fairly long time, then ate all of them, or at least a large number, in one sitting. So it's technically possible to give yourself cyanide poisoning from apple seeds. It just takes an ungodly number of apple seeds to do it.
I'm pretty certain I poisoned myself with lavender essential oil.
Oh, really?
Junk it?
No.
Oh.
Like, put it in a burner thing. Because I thought, I've not historically slept particularly well. Yeah. And I thought, I'll get one of these things. And I didn't fully read the instructions, but I got the idea. You put the lavender oil in this thing with water.
Yeah.
Put a few drops of that in. And I wasn't putting mad amounts in. I was just putting a bit more than it turns out you're supposed to. And this thing would just go through there. But we were staying in a rented house for a few months before we moved up to Norwich. And in quite a small room. And there wasn't really any ventilation sort of thing. And I started doing this. I didn't really make the connection. And I got really ill. I was having headaches. And I didn't realise it was this. And I was... It felt like I just flu and all this sort of stuff. And
you had eaten that bowl of apple seeds.
Yeah. Just sitting there in bed with my lavender and apple seeds and almonds. So I was ill, I stopped doing this. And then I hadn't realised that's what it was. And I went back and started using this diffuser again thing. And I instantly, the next day, I felt dreadful again. I was like, it's the lavender.
Yeah.
I can't tell people about this. That's the most... Imagine if I died, how pathetic that would be.
Oh,
probably yeah. Died from lavender poisoning.
Wow.
Yeah. But I looked it up and there is a... It's a thing.
It happens, yeah.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Blimey.
So yeah.
There we go.
Don't tell you that, do they, hippies?
No. Never go on about
that. Nanas.
Yeah.
And everyone else who loves lavender.
Yeah. Amaretto is one of those things that I think... But I only really have it at Christmas time. And whenever I have it at Christmas, I think, why am I not having this all year round? Baileys, that's the other one.
Yeah. There's, it's close to Baileys. There's a bottle of Hotel Chocolat chocolate liqueur that got opened at Christmas that I know is going to sit in a shelf in the fridge until we realise no one's actually having that. And it's going to be a year and then it'll be done.
Yes.
Gone off, yeah.
I've got a new favourite drink. I think I mentioned to Dan, Five Farms... Irish cream. It's mega Baileys.
Ooh.
I'm going to get a bottle. I'm going to bring it down to taste it at some point.
Nice.
It's like butterscotchy Baileys. It's glorious. Absolutely glorious.
Let's try that.
Yeah. Jess, you're a parent, as you mentioned. How has being a parent affected your pub going and how have you adapted to the pub with a child in tow?
When he was a baby, didn't matter. I took him to pubs. But then actually I eased off a bit once he could move. You realise it stopped being fun. When he was a baby, it was lovely meeting up with other friends who had a baby and going for an afternoon pint. Especially when you're on mat leave, it's lush.
Yeah.
But once he could move, it's ruined then. And now he's eight and he's sort of, he's pretty verbal about how bored he is there. So unless you're going to eat, which he's well into, thankfully, so he's quite good in restaurants, but if it's a pub where we're also going to have a meal, we'll be all right. But I don't think, at the moment, I can't quite get away with. I'm about to test it, actually. I've joined a book club that's going to meet in a pub once a month, only for an hour and a half. And I thought, do you know what? He can come with me for that. I don't want to only say I'm available when I haven't got him for that. That's the sort of thing where surely he can do an hour if I bring his tablet and some books and stuff like that and fun stuff to do. But he's not a pub baby like I was, that's for sure.
Yeah. Throw food at the problem, that'll sort it out.
Yes, it will with him generally.
I took my son, who's now 10, we just go together. I said, we're going to have a chat. So I said, maybe don't bring your phone. He went, well, I've got to look at my phone while I'm waiting for the food to come. So I'm just there, just going,
oh,
we'd have a nice chat. No, it's fine. It's fine. You play your Pokemon.
It's interesting that you said about the early days where you could still go to the pub loads. Because I did the same. I meet some parents and they're saying, yeah, obviously now we've got a baby, we don't go to the pub. I'm going, oh, no, you still can go to the pub.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fine. Well, the baby's going to lie there or need feeding wherever you are. It's the same.
Babies, get them in there. Get down there. Yeah, enjoy your life.
It's that the tough bit is the when they can move before they'll listen to you. That little That window there's
also, I think you make a really interesting point there about, I don't know, I think there's something so lovely about meeting a friend for a drink and a chat where you're not going to look at your phone for a couple of hours. And
yeah.
I actually sort of made me go, well, maybe I should be modelling that with him. Like, he loves a chat, and there'll be times where, at home, I'd be like, I thought we'd just have a nice... Or basically, because he doesn't want you to go and get on with stuff while he's going to sit in the bath for 2 minutes. He just wants you there the whole time. He's still that age. And he'd be like, we can have a lovely chat. And he knows if he says that, I have to go, okay, sit next to you. Yeah, while you throw plastic stuff at my head and tell me how old I look. But yeah,
nice.
Lovely guy.
Yeah,
no, he is.
Oh, wonderful. Right, we've now time for our listener suggestion. Every week, Dan speaks to one of our listeners to find a suggestion that our guests can have in their dream pub. You don't have to accept it. You can roundly reject it. You can welcome it in. You can make adaptions, whatever you like. Dan, what's our suggestion this week?
It comes from Sophie. Let's hear what she has to say.
Hi, I'm Sophie, and I would add compulsory half pints to Jess's pub. Because to be honest, I'm sick of pint drinkers shaming me for drinking half pints when they're just a better drink. They stay colder for longer, they feel cheaper, and if you're in a pub with a great selection of beers, you can try more beers. So yeah, justice for half pints.
Oh, wow. Interesting. It's more of a sort of continental style thing, where it's a smaller beer.
I really feel like she's throwing the cat amongst the pigeons here.
So this would be an effective
love this idea.
And
I went recently to, this year to San Sebastian in Spain, and it does feel like that kind of energy, and you love it. It was lovely, that idea of like, just have a little drink, but try lots of really little, small amounts of delicious things. And I am going that way these days, but... there are times where you want a pint. I really want a pint after a gig sometimes, after a scary thing, after a high adrenaline thing, that mood. I don't necessarily want 10 anymore, but I want a flipping pint.
Yeah.
I've got an adult size hand. I don't want anyone laughing at, and bladder. I don't want anyone laughing at Sophie for her half.
No.
It's the compulsory bit, I'm afraid, I take issue with. I like a halves culture.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid I'm reluctant to make it compulsory, just in case anybody is like flipping thirsty and knows that first drink's going to be quite a quick one.
So maybe
it needs a big biggie.
As part of your
as a feminist, I want women to be able to have a big fucking drink in their hand.
Maybe it's part of the inclusive nature of your pub.
Yeah.
It's frowned upon to look down on anyone or
no one can be shamed for any drink choice.
Yes.
Even Foster's.
Default. Maybe we go the other way. The default is a half, unless someone specifies.
Yeah.
You go, what do you have? Well, you didn't ask for a pint.
Maybe we do it like that. Let's give the option to go large.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But no pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The standard, I'll have standard. Serving is a half.
Standard serving. Okay.
Standard serving is a half. Hopefully Sophie's satisfied that is meeting her halfway.
That's nice.
And you have the option to go large if you're thirsty.
My view of the smaller drinks is that in Spain or Portugal, somewhere like that, when these are quite common, I think there's a very good reason for that, because it's hot and you're going to have a very warm drink.
It's going to warm up quick.
By the time you get to the end of it. And the problem I think we have here is they also have a table service culture there.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't want to be
getting
up
in
the
bar queue again and again.
And again.
That's true.
Especially if you're getting a drink. I don't know. I agree. Yeah. I was going to say to watch something, but maybe you wouldn't be doing that in a pub. But you might. Well, you might be watching some live comedy in a pub.
Yeah.
And you might. Yeah. You're maybe going to be sat there for an hour and a half. You are going to want a bigger drink.
Yeah. Getting gigs now that have two pint
half.
Don't they?
Two pint half. Oh,
yeah.
Clever. Festivals and stuff. Yeah.
We went to a cycling event, didn't we, a few years ago?
Yeah.
And in Holland. And they were only doing halves.
Yeah.
It wasn't. But I mean.
It was quite good. We went to the bar a lot, but no one else was going to the bar because they're all Dutch and they're all just watching the cycling. And we were the only ones paralytic.
It wasn't a great advert for British men, abroad. Was it? It really wasn't. And actually, the halves, they just seem to disappear quicker.
Mm. Yeah.
That was the day where it was, I mean, I had a couple of moments of shame. Let's not go into it.
The exact details, but I remember it was this incredible thing. It was like world cycling, indoor track cycling. It was brilliant to watch. Really good. And I remember there was a bar bit there. There wasn't sort of set seating and we didn't get there early enough to get good seats. We just stood at the back, which is quite nice because you stand there with a drink and watch the cycling. I remember I'd gone out to watch cycling. It was this amazing, exciting moment where there's this thing where one person will get knocked out each round. I can't remember what the event was called. And it's a bit where people crashed and they were flying there. And there's like blood spilling out onto things like that. But they had to, someone would still get through. So they were scrambling like
to get out the way.
Gladiators to get back on their bikes so one of them could like scrape over the line. And it's amazing. And it was incredible like that. And I was going, that is amazing. I turned around and I could just look to the bar and I just saw in silence the rest of them having this really heated argument about something. Okay. Like not like against it, but like a sort of debating something like that. I think, I'm just going to stay and watch this.
Brilliant.
Glorious times.
Love it.
Can't pass that in a cubicle.
Okay, so so Sophie's suggestion is not accepted, but a variant of it.
I've been influenced.
To help inclusivity.
Yes.
And all that sort of stuff. Great. Fabulous. If you've got a suggestion for something that could go into a future Moon Underwater pub, you can email me, robbie@moonunderpod.com, with your artistic vision. Jess, we get to put something in the pub jukebox now.
Yeah.
And you can put in one CD or mini disc of your choosing. What's it going to be?
I'm going to put in the CD 100% Rap 1 from 1990.
So can we check the track listing on this?
Yeah, no problem. I do know all the words to most of the songs still.
Okay.
It's the first album.
Pump
I ever
Up the
bought.
Jam on it?
Pump Up the Jam, Up the Jam. That one.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so I've got the right one. Yeah. So yep. 12 tracks.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Informer. You know, Sidemna Slomi Akapleo. Leaky Boom Boom Down. Yeah. All of the best songs ever made.
This is the right one.
I think so.
Okay. Does that look
Has
right?
Has it got a really jazzy cover? Oh, you can't see it.
I haven't got the cover,
I've got this one here. Is it this cover here?
There's several albums called 100% Rap. That's the problem.
No.
It's got K7 Come Baby Come.
Yes, that's
House
it.
Of Pain Jump Around.
That's what we've got.
Arrested
Development, People Every Day. Yes, it is. Can I Kick It? De La Soul, 3 is the Magic Number. Oh, Let's Some Talk About Sex, Baby. Let's Talk About You, MB. Hasn't even got Informer, actually.
This is an incredible lineup of music.
It's Can't really chilled. It's so good.
White Lines. I must have flash.
This is party pop with Scrumpy.
Yeah, lovely.
The cover of it. I didn't have this album. I did have its sister album, 100% Dance, which was similar sort of 90s hits.
I had its cousin album as well, 100% Reggae.
Did you?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't mucking about when I was 7.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a fantastic,
record.
There's not much. I can't think EYC the way you work it. I can't think how that goes. But the rest of them.
No,
Funky Cole Medina by
Tune.
Oh, absolute.
Come on.
Banger after banger this.
Yeah.
Yeah. We 90s sort of rap and dance sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was a glorious.
It was an era.
Era for the genre.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. I'd be hard to be sad through that album being on, wouldn't it?
Have you got a favourite track on that album there?
Now that we found love, what are we going to do with it? Not that. oh my gosh. Let's go for White Lines, Grandmaster Flash. That is an extraordinary song. That's so good.
In about 2009, but I was working at a thing called Channel B that was an early sort of internet TV channel before YouTube existed, but it wasn't the thing as YouTubers and stuff. And I was like booking music guests for it. And I saw that Grandmaster Flash had an album out. And I was like, Grandmaster Flash for me is like up there, one of the sort of gods of music. Sort of thing. That's incredible. And I thought, it'd be amazing if we could get an interview with him.
Yeah.
So I got in touch with the music promoter and said, look, I see Grandmaster Flash got an album out. Is there any chance he's coming over to the UK? He went, yeah, he's actually over next week, a week doing promo. I know it's late notice. If there's any way we could get some time to interview him, I can travel anywhere. We can do it 15 minutes, all it'll take sort of thing, whatever it was. He'll be in London, so that's fine. He said, what would you ideally want to do? I said, well, look, the dream would be he could come to our studio and we could do like a half hour show with him and all this. They went, They went, yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. When do you want him to come? He's here Monday to Friday. And I was like, oh, Grandmaster Flash isn't in that much demand now, is he? He was just like, oh, basically like that. I was like, oh. And, then I got an insight into what it's like because they sent me through a little bit of paper that was like, hey, Grandmaster Flash is a lovely guy, but here's a few pointers.
Oh,
Grandmaster Flash is not a rapper and has never rapped. He hasn't spoken to Melly Mel in 25 years, so there's no point in asking about this. I was like, oh, yeah. God, he'd get asked the worst questions.
And yeah, all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was great. He was a lovely guy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, oh, that's nice. Good.
Yeah.
Great.
There we go.
Glorious. Yeah,
terrific. Terrific.
Sounds
album.
Like he was delighted to have a half hour interview in the studio as well.
And similarly, I see E17, House of Love on here.
Oh,
I interviewed Tony Mortimer from E17, the same thing. And I thought, there's a potential he's going to be a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
Yay.
So lovely, so self-aware.
Yeah. They do seem capable of having a right old giggle at themselves, the old E17. Well,
he told us a story where when E17 broke up, he'd obviously been working out after years, like dancing every day, doing all this sort of stuff. Mm. And he just wanted to get away. So he went to the south of France for like 2 or 3 weeks and just ate and drank and just spent his time there. I was like, just to get away from the press and everything. And he came back into the country. And he came back into Britain and went through and someone just come through passport and someone came over to him and went, excuse me, Mr. Mortimer, Tony Mortimer. He said, yeah. He goes, my friend doesn't think it's you. And he's like, oh no, yeah, me, Tony Mortimer. He goes, no, my friend, and points at someone, doesn't think it's you in your passport photo because you look a bit different because he got really fat.
Gosh,
fine, I'll come back then.
Crikey.
That's good.
Poor sausage.
Nice. Tony, but yeah, there we go.
Amazing.
Tony, he'd be great on this.
Love it.
Wonderful, right? Well, 100% dance is without a doubt in that jukebox.
100% rap.
100% rap, sorry. Rap. 100% rap is 100% in here. And 100% rap. Mm. That's 200% rap and in here. And I will be putting many a pound of that jukebox to play that.
Yeah. My first post-divorce pint. The gin I had in Hull. My nan's homemade buckfast. The rum I drank with Liz Hurley. The lager I stole from the pigeon detectives.
Time now for a drink in time where the moon underwater will not just make special effects hoppy lager appear in here, but it will transport you back through the very fabric of time where you can enjoy a drink from your past and an occasion of the past once again. I've never found a good way to say that.
Yeah.
But I think people get the concept of it.
Yeah.
What occasion would you like to go back to enjoy a drink?
So I was torn, but I've managed to mention my other drinks in time, like the Amaretto Sours and the Garden Margarita. Here's, I think, my best drink in time that I'd like to go back to. So when I turned 21, so when I was growing up, my dad worked as a salesman for various wine companies, and for about 15 years he worked for Moët and Moët & Chandon, and although I think they're called Moët Hennessy or whatever by the end. And then he got made redundant, but by that point he had quite a stash, and it meant that, weirdly, growing up, when we were raiding our parents' booze cabinets, I always had some champagne to bring to house parties. And it meant, because of, I think, the free availability of it, we hated it. We thought it tasted of diesel. Like, none of us really had liked it yet. We weren't grown up enough. But when I was 21, my dad gave me a bottle of Dom Perignon from the year I was born, from 1983. But without really explaining that champagne doesn't age indefinitely. He did tell me how to store it on its side rather than upright, so at least I didn't ruin it. But I did a really silly thing. I only just drank it in time. I held on to it for years because I was waiting for something good enough to happen to me to feel like it deserved to be drunk. First of all, I started doing comedy, and then I said, right, when I get my first agent, I'll drink it. But then that happened and it just didn't feel special enough. And, you know, looking back, it didn't change much. I'm glad it did. Oh, the first time I get paid more than £100 for a gig, I'll drink it. Well, the first time. And, you know, I kept changing the goalposts, and then the goalposts would come and it wouldn't feel special enough. And it got to the point. Also, my son's dad, who I was with for, you know, over a decade, didn't really like champagne. So I didn't want to just go, should we just have that? Because I wanted to drink it with someone who'd really love it. And in the end, after I had my son, I just thought, you just can't live like that. You can't wait to enjoy you can't wait to celebrate things. And I don't know. So I drank it with some of my best friends from university who all love champagne, and it was just the right side of biscuity. It was really nice. It was still really nice. Just it had started to discolor a bit, and it started to go a little bit like, I don't know, it was still absolutely blimmin' lovely. Yeah,
well, that's
great.
Nice, because that chimes a bit with what you were saying about pubs, about that it's people that make the pubs and it's
time.
Going to do it. So it's nice that in the end you went, it's not about the achievement, it's about having the right friends around to share
it with. And I still was like, as long as I drink it in a moment, I'm going to remember forever. And I do remember we were in my friend Candice's flat in Peckham, and yeah, you know, there's a silly baby there now. I was the first one of that friendship group. They all thought I was mad to have a kid as young as 32. it was a flipping lovely moment. And nice to share it with a group of friends as well. And yeah, really lovely.
It's good that I do a similar thing where I will keep things and then go, when am I going to use it? And this year, just New Year's just gone, I thought, you know what, I've got all these bottles of wine. Not loads, I'm not that popular. I've got a few things that I've been given or acquired that are sort of quite not just drinking on a Tuesday wine, something like that. I thought, well, if I grab friends around for dinner, New Year's, and we'll just plough through five or six bottles of different things that we've got for various things. So I made like different courses that went with each sort of thing.
Oh, that's like that. Lovely.
So I had like seven or eight courses. A lot of stuff that you're prepping in advance. Yeah. And did this and just went through. Also, I had like a bottle of wine that's the same age as my son Otto, because I've done the similar thing as your dad did. I read an article where my daughter, I was born in 1977, which is a good year for port, and my daughter was born in 2011, which is a good year for port. I read an article about some guy in the same situation and how he'd bought some port for his daughter. So I will buy port, like every kid wants port. So I've got a case of port for her. There's a case of port for my youngest son, but Otto wasn't born in a good port year.
Yeah.
So I went, okay, we'll get something different. So he's got six bottles like Chateauneuf to Pap from a nice
thing,
which
lovely.
Is much better than port. But at the same time, we bought a case of that. We've only had one bottle of it before. So this is like, this is a bottle of Otto wine. This is from when he was born. This is, we'll have a little sip of that. And then other ones will be from different occasions where people have given us things or in return to a favour or something like that. So there's lots of lovely little things like that. So it's nice sometimes just go, let's go and drink them.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. And go, today's the day the thing happens. Like, don't wait to be happy. I think that's the message for that.
Lovely. That's a lovely, lovely choice story. For a drink, a drinking time. A little bit offended that you didn't pick having a pint with me in 2009, but we'll
move on. Sorry.
It's time now to find out Jessica's dream pub companion, but that is only for those of you who've invested in the Moon Underwater Patreon. If you want to find out how you can subscribe, you can do so at moonunderpod.com. And for the rest of you, we'll be back after this brief ad break. Right, welcome back to the non-Patreon people, and a lovely choice from Jessica for her dream pub companion.
You are barred.
Time now to bar something from the pub. We've picked loads of things that you want in it. What do you not want in your Moon Underwater?
It is tricky. I find it hard to choose between toddlers and scary men. I think
just mini scary.
I can't decide.
Well, they have a lot in common as well.
I know. I love it's the volume and the aggression. I do love the idea of a sign that says "No scary boys, no scary boys." But I am gonna have to go with toddlers. I do think, and I say this as a parent of a son, I couldn't love more. But children between the age of 1.5 and 4 are all shit company. And I think 1.5's the worst, I think, because what you've got there is someone who is as fast and as powerful and as loud as a person, but who is still very much as thick as a baby. And I don't want to be around them unless I've made them. And I said, you know, it's not fine. I think that ruins a pub. And it's happening so much now. It's where I live, and it's, I suppose it's lots of areas, but I live in South East London in Lewisham, and then all the best pubs on a Sunday are a cesshole of noise and the stench of shit. Like, They're screaming, they crap their pants, they throw stuff everywhere. They're under your feet, you're accidentally kicking them. They've got no respect for anyone else around them. Of course they don't, they're a toddler. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, yeah. I mean, at one point there was a bar in Southeast London that set up a Friday afternoon soft play corner. Oh, I mean, I suppose you've got to lean into it, and they're probably making so much money off those parents. And I was one of those parents for a bit, but I think I very quickly was like, this isn't, I'm not sure I'm bringing the right energy to this place. I'd rather go to an actual soft play.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And drink there.
And start bringing them back once they're 4 or 5, if you've restaurant and pub trained them.
There are some soft plays that sell booze as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Gravity Trampoline Park in Norwich is soft.
I love Gravity Trampoline Park. I went to the one in Edinburgh, but I got cocky and started doing tuck jumps and pissed myself. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's, I was 36.
There was a pub near me where they got a, it's not a soft play, but it's, it was kind of like just a but it's a separate room. It's like there's a pub.
And then there's Dulwich.
In Herne Hill.
No, it's a different one to that one.
Oh, okay.
It's the Florence.
Right.
And it's, they've got the main pub, then there's sort of a more eaty bit, and then there's a yard, garden yard, and then there's another room where during the day they do, like we used to do toddler things, someone used to come play guitar and they used to do that. But you can also, when they're a bit older, you can just...
Stick them in it.
Stick them in it.
Dreamy. That's and the family room. You've got no problem with that.
Yeah, and then sit in a different...
Yeah. Do you know what? They can, some pubs for it, but in my moon under the, I don't, I just want that to be a zone free from that, actually.
Okay. Are you including the beer garden in this?
Oh God. Again, I don't want it to be an absolute ban. I think there are subtle, how do you get rid of it? Maybe. Yeah. Well.
These are just shitty kids.
Yeah.
It's not all kids. Hashtag not all kids.
I think, Well, it's your pub.
I think, I'm afraid that is my dream. I'm going to get some hate for that. It's my pub. Yeah.
How do you think they would have reacted?
Until they're 18 months and they're allowed back when they're 4.
Yeah. Is it an age thing or is it a walking thing? Because is it once they can move that's the issue?
I don't mind if they can just roll.
Okay.
I quite like
crawling
mine
or walking.
Mine could climb before he could walk, and that was just as bad. We met in a pub and he found a room full of chairs and got into the middle of it and climbed up it like a terrible maze. Because it's too big to get in and save him. He had to save himself. Their liability. Save yourself.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Well, how do you think you would have, if you were told when your child was of that banning age,
yeah,
how do you think you would have felt? Would you have understood it or would you have been...
Initially, shirty, defensive, without doubt. And so I'll expect a bit of that from the occasional... from a listener to this.
There is a
backlash, but there are other pubs where you are so welcome.
There is a bar near where I live, bar, restaurant, and they have banned kids.
Yeah.
And there was a big row about it. But they went, you can take them anywhere. Yeah. This is just a place.
This can be one place where they're
Where people don't want them.
I also don't want my pub to be very big. I think that's the other thing. I like a snuggly, a cozier pub.
So, fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go.
Yeah.
It's just health and safety that they can't be there. Yeah.
You can hide behind
I'm going to have about 3 open fires.
Yeah. Yeah. In the middle of the room.
Yeah.
It's a fire pit.
Fire pit, every wall. Stick a fireplace in it. Very well vented.
Some old medieval place, like the flames for light everywhere around, torches burning.
And swearing's welcome. So, loads of things that you might not want your kid around.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they're fine. Yeah, well, it's pub. She's very welcome to ban whatever she'd like. So, kids, you're launched from a certain age. I'm curious about your scary men one as well. I'm wondering how you determine the scarability for that, if that was what you had gone for.
It's really hard. Generally, if they're in a group in sports clothes, it's the singing and pushing, unsolicited comments on anybody's body. There can be loads of, like, a siren can go off, perhaps, when any of those behaviours occur.
So anyone can come in, but then it's a straight rage you're out if there's any of that behaviour.
Yeah, any of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No lads.
Yeah.
But then I say that, then sometimes I love watching football in a pub. where everybody's been a bit like that. So,
well, that's the good thing about pubs. There's a variety of different pubs for everything. And in this one, there's no babies or scary men. You've got plenty of other options out there and plenty of other Moon Underwaters out there as well. Mm. But this is Jessica's one. Before we get on to naming your pub, Jess, you've got a UK and Ireland tour coming up.
Yes!
Metal.
Yeah.
What's the concept? Is there a concept or is it just jokes?
It is primarily just jokes. Scenario jokes. It's metal with two T's, and I think effectively I wanted to show a bit about trying really hard and accelerated aging. And I think kind of I've sort of watched trying really hard go slightly out of fashion in the sense that people want, because of the internet, basically, because of social media, people want quite quick returns on any effort that they put into anything. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just the way the world's gone, a kind of short, sharp, quick reward way of doing things.
Life hacks.
Yeah. Quick hacks. Yeah. In and out. Quite vapid. And actually, I think there's a lot to be said for like putting a long, slow shift into something and feeling like the feeling when you get something, anything from like, oh, I don't know, something you saved up for, but it took years, through to, I didn't think I'd ever be able to do a pull-up. But actually, if I put the right consistent work in, and it's not about losing weight or anything, it's just actually the right physical work into getting stronger. If you do it consistently over enough time, you can do it. And the feeling of getting something that you've earned over time like that, over real dedication. So it's sort of about trying really hard and sort of simultaneously about realizing sort of the older I get, the faster I'm aging. And I'm not slowing down cruelly. I'm kind of speeding up. I mean, I've got shit to do. I'm in a rush. So, and I think harnessing those things and that attitude and then looking out at the world a little bit and seeing if we can reframe how we look at some of the challenges in the world that feel impossible at the moment. If we think about attempting things sometimes, even when they feel impossible.
Yeah. Sounds great. And you're coming to Norwich, which is the main thing I look for.
Yes, I love doing shows in Norwich. Genuinely, some of my favourite audiences there. It's always lovely in Norwich.
What's your favourite place on this tour? Go and pick one.
Crikey.
Ooh. What's going to be the best show?
Bristol's always up there.
Yeah.
Aldershot. Always up there. Audiences in Aldershot are flipping brilliant. Glasgow, you just can't have a terrible time.
Aldershot's surprising shot.
Yeah, I know. I thought I'd throw a curveball one in there. Yeah. I'm going to regret having forgotten somewhere now. This is the biggest one I've done yet. I'm going to loads of places I've never been to before. York is always a belter.
Yeah. That's good, yeah. I like weird places that are unsurprisingly good. The best place to do Vox Pop interviews in the country, Maidenhead.
I think
it's because you get a real mix of everything. You get like a mix of sort of like student-y type age people, you get really posh people, really not posh people, all like almost a sort of exact smorgasbord of people.
Love it.
It's an old film called Magic Town with James Stewart, which is about a town a bit like that in America, which is a perfect place if you want to do polling. That town represented like the whole of America.
Oh, brilliant.
So it was like, and he found it, so it was this really cheap way of doing incredible polling to make loads of money.
Wow. Cool.
It's a good film. Yeah.
I remember
Maidenhead must be the magic town. Of...
I remember going to see the film director John Landis. It was a screening of Blues Brothers and he was doing a Q&A afterwards. It was brilliant. It was one of my favourite films. And in that he was talking about when they were doing like a test screening of Blues Brothers. And he said there's like a theatre somewhere near LA or in LA. And that's the one that they test it on because it's a mix of... everyone, so they would take that there and see how it does in this one theatre and then decide on what to cut from the film based on one screening.
Wow.
I don't know if that's still the case, but it certainly was at the time. So Metal, where can people get tickets or find out more about
it? Yeah, my website, jessicafosterq.com. If you click on My Doings, or there's a link on the first page to tickets, or it's all over my social media, which is at jessicafosterq on X and Instagram.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's over 50 dates all over. Yeah, really active on it, more on Instagram than I am on anywhere else, to be honest. But I'd love to have people come along. I've never done the tour so big, so that's a bit terrifying. Looking forward to the whole first half of 2024.
It's going to be great. Fabulous. Okay, I'm hopefully going to come along to Norwich. I've got to get a babysitter because my wife's away. Okay. My wife's going to see the, what's it called, Dorian Gray play.
Picture of
Dorian Gray. That's it.
Cool. So,
but that's in London, I think. It's not important. I can just keep that to myself.
Love it.
Drink up, please. It's time.
Finally, Jessica, we get to name your pub. Yeah. What are we going to be calling this wonderful child-free pub?
Oh, I've changed my mind at the last minute.
Oh. Drama.
I was going to call it the Crispy Moth because that's what I thought a pub in Greenwich was called for about 10 years before I read the sign properly and realised it was the Gypsy Moth.
that would have fitted in with your butterfly themed
dream.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's keep to the Crispy Moth.
That have to tell us what the other one was going to be.
I have recently discovered that I used to think that Daddy Longlegs had really short lives and that was like a... But it turns out that's a myth. I thought they only lived for a day and I thought they were the perfect example of something that had a very short life. Like I was researching this for my show. Exactly. They live for years. It's a complete myth.
Really?
And then I was like thinking... I don't know. I quite like the fact that it's felt like the perfect description of me as mummy short legs, the opposite of a daddy long legs. So I was going to call it mummy short legs.
That's also nice.
Also good. So yes, I'm going to stick to the Crispy Moth.
Lovely. Great choice.
Yeah.
Incidentally, on the subject of misunderstood facts and stuff, my friend Mark, when we started at university, thought seahorses were the size of actual horses. Could you imagine how terrifying that would be if you're swimming and one of those came over?
You'd cack yourself.
Because you'd never seen him in context with anything. I get where he's coming from. He just seemed blue and a seahorse.
Really nice.
I did think that when I was a kid.
Did you?
Did you?
When he was eight little, definitely. Yeah. Assumed they were. Maybe not the size of horses, but, you know.
Pretty big.
Anyway, no seahorses in the Crispy Moth. Jessica, thank you so much for coming and sharing your pub choice with you. It's been a real joy. And I'll see you in another... How many years?
15 years. Oh, 15 years. 15 years, hopefully, before then. Thank you for having me.